buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet. I climbed down up inside. I pulled the choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and this show is called Under the Hood, and we're here to talk about your car problems, and perhaps dispel some car ideas that come from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. For instance, does your car really know what kind of oil you put in it? And once you go to synthetic, can you change back to conventional oil? Those are the kinds of things that we can help you with. So if you'd like to call us, it's easy, 602-508-0960, 508-0960. Now's the time. The lines are wide open, and we're going to take your calls as quickly as we can. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. They're a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop located at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Larry Harker's Auto Repair is a trusted name for quality and affordable automotive service and maintenance in the Phoenix area. If you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, be sure to visit Larry Harker's Auto Repair and tell him that Mark sent you. I have a map on my website of the repair shops that I endorse. And south of Indian School and west of the I-17, Larry Harker's really holds down that area, along with S&S Tires. So if you're in that area, I've got some good places, but each quadrant of the metropolitan area, we've got really good body shops, transmission shops, and mechanical repair shops. So if you'd like to join that, you can. And if you have a good car repair shop, you should stay with them because that's important. Okay, Honda Motors is recalling 300,000 vehicles globally for airbags that may inflate too much with too much pressure in a crash, causing metal and plastic pieces flying and causing injuries or death. It affects the Accord, the Civic, the Odyssey, the Pilot, the CRV, and a lot of other models manufactured in 2001 and 2002. There's some 273,000 vehicles in the United States, so we're looking for those. The latest recall is an expansion of recalls for the same problem in 2008 and again carried out in 2009 as well as last year. Let me interpret that for you, okay? Let me read it for you again. The latest recall is an expansion of recalls for the same problem in 2008 and again in 2009 as well as last year. The recall now covers 2 million vehicles worldwide. What that means is we had a problem, we tried to fix it and we didn't. Then we tried to fix it again and we didn't. And now we think we got it. It's akin to the Ford that they've recalled this switch that's located on your master cylinder to cancel your cruise control. Now, everybody else in the world does it one way, and Ford does it the other way. Everybody else cancels your cruise control using your brake light switch, a very dependable switch, but not Ford. Ford puts this little switch on the master cylinder, and its job is to cancel your cruise control. The problem is when the switch goes bad, brake fluid seeps up inside of it, and as a result of that, it gets hot, it catches your car on fire, and you better hope the car's not in the garage. Because in the cars I've seen, the house goes with it. Thank God I've never been involved in one where there was death. But it's pretty doggone scary to wake up and your whole house is on fire because the car inside the garage caught fire. I think that recall's 3 or 4 deep. And you can't, and just recently, this is what they did. They've replaced the switch the first time. I think they replaced the switch the second time. They replaced the switch the third time. And now we're going to put a fuse on that circuit. So when the switch shorts, we're going to pop the fuse as opposed to letting the car catch fire. And my question to you is why didn't we do that at the very beginning, which is the most common sense approach? Why don't we fuse that circuit? Why don't we put some kind of a protection device in there as opposed to trying to redesign a switch that was never supposed to be there in the first place? Okay, that's my that's my heartache for today. And we'll put that paper aside. A real quick story. A young man comes into the shop with a 97 Cadillac DeVille with 126,000 miles. It looks so. He wants us to look it over because he just purchased the car. He already purchased the car. He said he wants us to do a used car check over and state some of the concerns with the vehicles. Now, folks, there's a problem here because this is supposed to be done before the car is purchased, not after the car is purchased. He says the check engine light is on. And the recent owner, the previous owner said, well, that's why the light's on is because I changed the battery. He says on his way home, the vehicle overheated. He finds coolant and the oil very low. We take the car for a test drive, and we find out the check engine light is on, as he said, and the vehicle's running rough, it's idling and misfiring, and we also see white smoke out the tailpipe. White smoke out the tailpipe means that that engine is either aspirating coolant, it's inhaling and sending steam out the tailpipe because it's using coolant instead of gasoline and air, or in some cars' cases, and typically these are the older cars, we're sucking transmission fluid out of the transmission. So we perform a block test, and even before starting the used car checkover, we clearly determine that the head gaskets are blown on this car. So here's my question. Isn't that information you'd rather have on the front side? Everybody in town charges between $50 and $100 for what we call a used car checkover. The tires, the brakes, the suspension, the electrical system, the air conditioning system, the computer, the stored codes, the fuel trims, the emission statuses of all the monitors, and we really do, as an industry, do our best to give you a list of what it needs today, what we think you need to budget for next week, next month, and then down the road next year. So it's kind of a list of priorities so that you can negotiate a fair price. If there's nothing immediate wrong with the car, you might have to pay the price. But if there's $600 worth of repairs, then you can negotiate perhaps that $600 down. Or if you're buying it from a dealer, maybe you can have them do the repairs and then buy the car, which means you don't have to. I promise you this. If you have a used car checkover, you will save the $100. If you pay $100, you'll save the $100 on the long run. You'll save it in negotiation postures, some information that allows you to negotiate the price down. You'll save it in time and trouble. But this is a situation where this was kind of ugly because he had already purchased a car. With the holidays here, a lot of people were buying cars for their kids and themselves. And I want to remind you, a pre-inspection before you purchase the car. Most of the dealers say they do 100-point inspections, but in my opinion, the best evaluation is from a third party. I'm not even going to pick on the dealers because, as you well know, in our industry, the mechanical repair industry, we have dealers, we have chain stores, we have specialty shops, mufflers, brakes, transmissions, and then we have general repair. So there's four of us in this group of people who provide services. I suggest that the inspection should not be performed by the person that's selling you the car, whether it's an independent shop, a chain store, whether it happens to be the manager of the chain store. I don't think he should do his own cars. All righty. There's an app on the radio called TuneIn Radio. It's an app on the internet that's called TuneIn Radio that you can download for free, and you can listen to our show live from any of the devices. For instance, you can look at it with respect to your iPhone, your iPod Touch, and your iPad. So those of you that aren't on the AM dial or working on Saturday and you have an iPhone, then tune us in through TuneIn Radio. That's the keyword you'll search for. It covers 50,000 stations and a whole lot of shows. And the best part, the app is free. Or you can listen to us online, or you can send me an email and I'll send you a copy of the show. It's an MP3 file, and it's just under the limit for being able to transfer over the internet. So we typically cut the front and the back of it off and a lot of the stuff that we don't need. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The other day, a friend of mine tells me that he owns a repair shop, and he says he has one repair shop tells customer that they need $3,000 worth of work. So the customer goes to his repair shop, and he says, I expected, because of I got to see the estimate from the first shop, I expected this thing to be dripping oil from underneath it like you can't believe. From the front to the back, from the driver's side to the passenger side, he says, I expected this to be a mess. It was a Lincoln, and it had 140,000 miles on it. He says, Mark, I put it up on the rack, and the bottom side of this car couldn't have been drier. He says, I do agree that it needed an oil filter housing gasket, and I'm going to replace that. I do agree it needs a power steering pump because the switch that controls the pump's activity, whether you coast or you run full blast, the switch is broken. But he says, that really and truly is going to be under $400. And he said, there is really no reason to pull the transmission and reseal it because there's simply some moisture around the speed sensor that has not even ever created a single drip. And he says it would be called seeping. We have an O-ring that's seeping. The question is, has it ever created enough of a leak to drop on the ground in a period of a day? That really is the deal. And he says this has a cross member underneath this sensor that they condemned, but he says there's no oil on the cross member. It's never so much as leaked a drop. So those are the kinds of issues when you get those really big estimates. It's a good idea to get a second opinion. In this particular case, the customer was also told he got 140,000 miles on it. Why would we want to start replacing parts in case they fail at this late stage? Why don't we just fix things as they break? He says, I want to do the power steering pump because if it blows the hose off of it, he says it's going to probably catch fire. So he says that's a safety issue, but the rest is okay. So I think it's a good idea, and I don't know what that number is. I tell my customers, whatever your comfort zone is, if it's 3, 4, 5, 6, 700, 800, 900, 1,000, whatever it is, draw a line in the sand and say anything over this number, $600, I'm going to get a second opinion. And just make sure everybody's bidding evenly. The other day, I was involved in an email exchange where the shop said the air conditioning and the compressor and the labor is $1,000. And the other shop was well over $1,000, but the other shop had refrigerant, shop supplies, sales tax, and environmental charges. Plus, they had a fan belt, and they had a O-rings at the back of the block and the expansion valve. So there was a significant difference between the two of them. The customer got more, but when you boiled it all down, the parts and the labor were pretty much the same. It's just estimate number one was somewhat short. And it was going to be one of those things, well, yeah, it is $1,000 for the compressor and the labor, but really your bill's $1,200 because of all these other, all the other add-on stuff. So that's what's important is exactly what does your estimate entail? Exactly what does it contain? Write it all down for me. How much do I have to write my check for is a nifty way. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm happy to take your call. I'm Mark Salem. This is AM 960 KKNT.
Hi,
I'm
the mechanic. Raised up from under my hood and he shook his head and said, this ain't good. Timing belt's done shrunk, one size too small.
Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I hope your timing belt hasn't shrunk too small. And actually, they don't shrink too small. They get too big, and then they slip, and then you end up needing a tow truck. But that's a great song for a car show, and that's why we have it here. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're in Mesa on the south side of Main Street, just east of Stapley and Mesa. Thompson's has been in business since 1970, and they're AAA approved, they're ASE certified Blue Seal, and a NAPA certified auto care. Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair, and they've been named the Business of the Year in 2009 by the Mesa Chamber of Commerce. They're equipped to handle anything you need on your foreign or domestic cars, and I'm proud to have Brian and Thelma from Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa on my best car shop list, and that list you can find at MarkSalem.com. MarkSalem.com. Richard, you're up first, buddy. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Mark. I have a 2003 Camry, and on cold mornings, which doesn't happen too often here, but it has been lately, at the end of the start cycle, when I let off the key, I get what we used to call the Bendix noise, that little grinding.
Yep.
And the car starts. It only happens the first time in the morning when it's cold. Doesn't happen all summer. Happened last year when it was cold, and I read on the internet, someone told me, turn the key on, don't start it, turn off the environmental, the air conditioner, let it shut down, and then start it. And believe it or not, that seems to help, but I'm not all the time. I still get the noise.
There's no relationship at all. I'm confused by that because
I am too. That's just crazy. But yeah. I thought I'd bring it up.
Okay. I know what I'd do is I'd get underneath there and I'd find some way to stick a straw from a WD-40 can And even if I had to unbolt the starter and slide it back just a little bit, and I just cloud that area good with some WD-40. What's happening is the starter drive is thrown out by the solenoid, and it engages the flywheel. And when the flywheel begins to spin fast and the motor starts, it's supposed to throw the starter drive back into the nose of the starter. And what's happening, yours isn't. The real repair, depending on it's a 2003 Camry, and if you've never had a starter in it before, the real repair down the road may very well be, let's put a starter in it. But right now, I am quite sure if you just could somehow or another, I mean, if there's an inspection cover that you can take off during an oil change and you can look up there and you can see the starter drive, just cover it good with, just like you're painting it, with three coats of paint at the same time, and I'm quite sure that'll take care of it. It's just what happens is in the cold weather, the grease will turn to a wax, and in the summertime, the grease is a lot more liquefied and a lot softer. So in the cold weather, we end up with these kinds of problems. They're quite easy to repair. If I was unscrupulous, I'd sell you a starter. But if you came in with an 03 Camry and you had 130,000 miles on it and it had never had a starter, I would make it very clear that you're about to spend $50 on a real good guess. I would make that very clear to you. And just to protect myself from down the road somewhere when the starter fails, it's all of a sudden my fault. Okay?
Am I hurting the flywheel at all with this grinding noise? Or is that, am I causing damage?
Well, on the backside, no. Because what's happening is the starter drive is chattering on the shaft as it goes backwards. So it's disengaged, and then it goes all the way to the back. But it does it rapidly, like a machine gun sound.
Yeah.
So the answer, well, and then if you pull the inspection cover off, if you've got small shards of metal in it, then yes, you are. That's part of the process of getting the starter nose cleaned up or getting the starter nose lubricated is to look at that. But without hearing it, I can't tell you for sure if you're hurting the flywheel, but I doubt it. Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Brian, you're up next. Brian, how can I help you today?
Hey Mark. Just calling. My wife has a 2007 Santa Fe Hyundai, and it's telling me that, according to the manual, that she needs to have her timing belt replaced, and I'm just curious, how urgent is that?
Okay, how many miles does it have on it now?
It's got about 50,000, 52,000.
And what does the manual call it, at 60?
It says, I think it says actually at 50.
Well, I'm not going to argue with the manufacturer.
Okay.
I think that that shows how stupid I am, but they're the ones that built your car. And that's quite early. I must tell you, that's quite early. We're seeing Hondas go 105, 110,000 and not call for it. We're seeing lots of cars not call for a timing belt till well after 100,000. But the owner's manual is the Bible for that car. If I were you, I would probably walk that car up to the beginning of the summer. Now, when you take the timing belt off, you have to look at the water pump because it's right there. And you don't want to pay duplicate labor. So you don't want to put the timing belt on in April and then in July have to do the water pump and pay all that labor again. You want to look at the camshaft seal, the crankshaft seal. You want to look at the tensioners and the idler pulleys. There's a lot going on in the front end of that engine. And you don't want to go in and out of it four or five times at 300, 400 a crack to do each one of those parts one by one. I'm just suggesting that they're looked at. And the question is if this was your mother's car and she got around with a cane, what would you replace on this car? That's what I'm suggesting. So I don't know if I'd wait too long. If you're at 50 and it calls for 50, or if you're at 52 and it calls for 50, I'd probably want to do it before the real heat of the summer kicks in.
Okay.
And then there's a variety of belts that you have an option to. But frankly, if the belt has a name on it that you recognize, it's going to be okay. But if it has a belt name, I mean, if you see Goodyear, Gates. If you see, you know, some of those names that you recognize, that's a good belt. But if you don't ever remember seeing that name before, it's probably a belt I wouldn't put on.
Okay, I appreciate the information.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Stephanie, you're up next. Stephanie, how can I help you today?
Good morning. My husband called last week about the analog brake system light that came on in my Avalon.
Uh-huh.
And he was going to check in to see whether he could replace them himself. And we found out that they're quite expensive. They're like $241 a piece. So you had suggested that we get a diagnostic on it. You had recommended a place over in the air park, which I'm going to ask you again the name of that. You didn't write it down.
Okay.
So my question to you is, Do they all have to be done? Because the car is very old, and it's got 170,000 miles on it. It's 1998, and I tend to keep my cars a long time and keep good care of them. But I'm thinking about getting a new car, but I'm not ready to yet. So my question is, do you have to do all four of them, or if we get the diagnostic, can it isolate which I'm assuming it's a sensor at this point. I don't know. My assumption would be that it is. But can it isolate the sensor? If it is a sensor, can it isolate which sensor has to be replaced?
Well, I'm struggling right now because I'm looking through my sheets here trying to find out what we talked about last week. But is this an ABS light, a yellow ABS?
Yes.
Okay, I remember now. I remember. And why didn't you just call in yourself, young lady?
I should have, huh?
You should have. You know what? Between you and me and the fence post, I'd rather have just all women customers. Because they come in and they give me the symptoms, and the guys come in with their leather loafers and their silk socks, and they tell me how many cars they've overhauled. And as they walk in,
1 minute.
If the lobby's full of women, I got to listen for 30 minutes on how many cars they overhauled in high school. And,
you're talking about my husband. You're describing him. But I did appreciate it because you told him if the light was red, then he better get me out of the car. So I was in the car driving when he was talking to you, and I looked down there, and it's kind of an orange color, so it's not red.
Yeah. Okay, well, when we come back, because I've only got a few minutes or seconds left here, I will answer your question on the backside of this break, okay? So I can't give you good answers in a quick period of time, but the answer is yes. We can diagnose exactly which wheel sensor is bad, and I'm telling you right now, there's no wheel sensor out there for $250. So we've got a communication gap here. But what I think I said last week was is 75% of ABS lights are wheel sensors, and there's four of them, and it'll be one. I'm Mark Salem. This is AM 960 KKNT 602-508-0960, and we've got open lines available. We'll be back.
The mechanic raised up from under my hood, and he shook his head and said, "This ain't good. The timing belt's done shrunk one size too small. No spark plug wires are a little too long. Your main problem."
Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. You're listening to AM 960 KKNT, and the name of this show is Under the Hood with yours truly, Mark Salem. Saturdays starting at 10 a.m. right here on KKNT. We were talking with Stephanie and her husband John last week called in, and they have an Oldsmobile that had an ABS light on, a yellow ABS as opposed to a red ABS, which there's a difference. So let me recap something for all of you, because I already talked with John and Stephanie about this. If it's yellow, it means it's okay to continue to drive. Just be cautious. And in the case of traction control, anti-lock braking system, active suspension, most of those lights are going to be yellow. And when they're on, that just means that that system is down. But it doesn't mean it's so serious that you have to stop and call a tow truck because the light is yellow. That means caution. A red dash light means shut that thing off right now. Not at the next exit. Not when you get home. It's now. So, Stephanie, what I said was is that there's anywhere from 3 to 4 wheel sensors. 75% of the time when the ABS light comes on, the wheel sensor's bad. It is true that some of the other components in your Oldsmobile could cost thousands of dollars.
It's an Avalon. It's a Toyota.
Same thing. It's going to be some of the computer, the pump, the ABS pump that creates pressure to apply and not apply your brakes. That can be thousands. You can decide once you know what the repair is. So all you're going to pay for is the diagnostic. I want to know this is how the conversation sounds. I have an ABS light on. It's yellow. I'd like you to determine what's causing the yellow light to come on and call me with an estimate. What will the diagnostic charge be? I'll answer that for you. It's between $50 and $125. And when you call me back, I'm going to ask you if this is a guess or a fix. Because if it's a guess, then I want to know whose money we're guessing with. Is it your money or my money? Because I don't want to guess. But if it's a fix, then just convince me it's a fix, and then we'll decide what we're going to do. That's the appropriate thing. Now, up north, there's two shops. Actually, there's just one right now. And that's Air Park Auto. And it's run by a lady by the name of Nadine. And Nadine and Stacy opened that up many years ago, maybe 20 years ago. And Stacy passed on to heaven. And Nadine answers to no man. And she is the owner and operator of Air Park Auto. So
I'm going to go see her. I do want to ask you one last question. Okay. Because my husband got that price from the Toyota dealer. And you said no analog brake sensor with $200-some-odd. Is it more or less than that?
Well, what I'm confused with is I don't know the answer to the question. Let me discuss what's going on in my empty head. First of all, I don't know if the diagnostic money is there, because I see repair bills as having three parts. There's the diagnostic money, then there's the part, then the labor. Okay? So there's three components of the repair bill. If they have the diagnostic, the part, and the labor, I'm okay with $250.
No, it was just a part. He called the part department because it was going to install it itself, and he knows it was the part.
Okay.
So,
but I also don't know if I can buy this wheel sensor through other vendors or if I have to go to Toyota. And that's a concern for us aftermarket people. And then, and number three is he has no more of an ability to diagnose that car over the radio or the phone than I do. We can only talk about commonalities. And so in your particular case, we need to find out what it is. Now, you have the choice too, Stephanie, of saying no, thank you, but no. And here's why. As long as the light's on, I told you before that you still have conventional brakes.
Uh-huh.
So you can still drive that car. It's just that you don't have this. It's like having... I have power windows, they broke, and now the windows won't roll up and down, but that doesn't mean I can't drive my car. It's just going to be a little bit weird going to the drive-thru at McDonald's.
Okay, I'm going to go over and see Nadine. I'm going to get the diagnostic, and that will be the first part, and we can make our decision based on that.
Good. Good, Stephanie. Thank you very much for calling.
And thanks.
Lance, you're up next. Lance, how are you today?
Hey, how's it going, Mark?
Good.
Hey, first of all, if you ask me to spread my hands in front of my face, I'm not driving, so the road signs in Phoenix will be safe.
It's a good idea.
I was laughing all week.
That was funny.
I was wondering why you did it before. No, you finally got one.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a question. You were talking about the blown head gaskets. I got a 2000 Astro Chevy van, and the other day I noticed it was running okay, that there was a puddle of green water out the tailpipe where it shouldn't be. So I took off the intake manifold, and I noticed, though, I never dealt with the plastic intake manifold gasket.
Yeah. And let me tell you something, Lance. I'm running up against some time here, so I'm going to put you on hold for just a minute, because I've got to take a break here in just a few seconds. And yes, I want to talk about symptoms on your car. So let's set the manifold. When we come back from the break, let's set the manifold aside. But let's talk about symptoms first. And I like the white smoke and the green out of the tailpipe. But I want to ask you some other questions, and then we'll talk about your intake, okay? So you'll be prepared for the symptoms analysis. I'm Mark Salem. The phone number here is 602-508-0960. 508-0960. And we can talk about your car question or problem, because the lines are wide open.
Hello.
And welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and you're listening to 960 KKNT on the AM dial. And every Saturday morning here at 10 o'clock, we're talking about cars. Lance, I'll be right with you. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. They have years of experience working on both domestic and import vehicles, both gas and diesel. Kurtz Auto is located at I-17 and Bell in Phoenix. Since they opened in 1992, they've been a member in good standing with the Better Business Bureau. They're located at I-17 and Bell. If you live in that area and you're looking for a good car repair shop, I assure you Kurtz is a good one. So that helps you understand why I can recommend Kurtz Auto Repair. Joe, if you want to call back, I'm going to get you next. I noticed you dropped off. It's probably because your wife had chores for you to do. But if you want to call back, I'll take care of you. Anybody else? 508-0960. We've got open lines available. And Lance, let me ask you a question. Before you pulled the intake off of this Astro van, did you have any drivability concerns or idle concerns cold first thing in the morning?
Hi, Mark. No. Starting the engine, it always started fine. It was just a rough, low-speed operation, and the engine light would come on occasionally, and when I had the code check, it was, I believe it was 0300, the random cylinder misfire.
Okay.
And so what I did was I took
No, Joe. Lance, we're going to do this my way.
Okay,
I want to talk about symptoms. Okay? During this period of time over the last 6 months, have you been adding coolant to the engine?
I have not.
Okay. So what we've got so far is you can't possibly have a head gasket problem if you don't have a consumption of coolant. So the engine random misfire could be anything. It could be an EGR leak. It could be a bad spark plug, a bad wire. but it's certainly not going to be a head gasket problem because you don't have a consumption of coolant. So there are three separate symptoms that have to be there in order for you to be a head gasket. But anyway, you got the intake off of this, and I'll bet you found one or more of the corners kind of really looked ugly.
Oh, yes, sir. The gaskets look original, and they were nasty. They were flat. They were cracked by the water jackets. And one thing I noticed that was kind of weird, when I took the plastic valve covers off, I did a head gasket before, and both heads had that brownish color to them, you know, inside the head.
Okay.
On mine, it's one side only.
Okay.
And the other side looks like it's brand new.
All right. What do you mean brownish color? Where's
Well, I mean, it's where the oil mixes with the water, and it creates that covering that covers the metal parts inside the engine. Maybe it's not brown, but it's definitely, it's not like engine color, like gray. It's like brown color.
Okay.
And one side of one cylinder head has it, the other one doesn't.
Okay. I'd have to see that, Lance, because I don't know the answer to that. When oil mixes with water, it looks like a brown milkshake.
Yeah.
But if you have water in the oil, you're going to have it in both heads because the oil circulates to both heads, so it's not really something that you can turn around and say, no, it's not this or it is that. But in your particular case, just make sure the intake gasket's good and sealed. Make sure you use a Felpro brand or something like that. Put it all together. Follow your torque sequence. Watch your coolant level and see if your engine misfired. Your code goes away. And if it does, you're home free. Okay?
Hey, Mark.
Uh-huh.
Well, one quick question. That has the CFSI fuel injection.
Okay.
And it has a pressure relief valve in the back of the six injector block that's underneath that plastic manifold.
Okay.
Now, when I got to it, the book I have says it should have a vacuum hose on it. And my question for you is, isn't it sitting inside the intake manifold? Isn't that the vacuum?
No. If you move the pressure regulator, you'll find that it's attached to a port on the vacuum side of the intake manifold.
Right, but it has a thing on the outside that's supposedly have a vacuum line on it.
Okay.
It's got a place where it's supposed to have one.
How does it fit to the manifold, Lance?
Well, I mean, it's inside, and it just sits inside the intake manifold.
It's not attached to anything.
No, sir. It's like a block of six, and it has those pinhole valves that come off with the little line.
Okay.
And the thing is, it's in the back, and I don't think I had a problem with that, but just to be safe, I just stuck a little short piece of vacuum line on it. But I was just wondering because, you know, inside the intake manifold, that's where I thought the vacuum came from.
Okay, well, I've never seen that before, but then again, I'm trying to fix it through your eyes. But good luck to you, Lance. I appreciate your call.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much. You betcha. And I wanted to remind you, too, that when it comes to a particular way to fix your car during the repair process, it's important that you know that the frame or unibody construction integrity of your vehicle is as important to your car as the foundation is to your home. Phoenix Body Works uses the finest frame and unibody measuring equipment that the auto body industry has to offer. That's important information when you're getting your vehicle repaired because after an accident, I've seen many cars come in with bent frames. They need to be repaired correctly because if they're not, the car will never work right again. You see, at Phoenix Body Works, they're going to make sure your car's put back together in the right way, on time, at an affordable price, with quality parts. They're hassle-free and they're insurance company-friendly, but they watch out after you. They know how to work with the insurance companies, but your interests are in front of everybody else's. Phoenix Body Works is located at 19th Avenue, a half block north of Deer Valley Road, so if you need some body work or just a paint job, or if you really want some really good guys to work on your car, then Phoenix Body Works is at 623-582-1434. 582-1434. When you talk about a particular problem with frame shops and framework, here's the thing. They have a jig that they build your car on. And if you look up underneath your car, there are certain holes in your frame and in your unibody. Some of them are D-shaped, some of them are square, some of them are round, some of them are rectangular. But your car sits on this jig that has these protrusions coming up that fit in all those places. That way all your doors will open and close right. And that way the car will go straight down the road where the tail end isn't to the right or to the left like we've seen lots of other cars. That's why it's so important to have your car fixed by somebody who has the right equipment. In the days of old, my dad and my brothers used to fix cars with a ball of string. And then we figured out that the string kind of stretches, which gave us bogus readings. So then we started using wire. But really and truly, we have machines today that can bring it down to the thickness of a hair. And that's where you want it. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, then hunt out those body shops that have the proper frame equipment, especially if your car's been hit hard. It's also important, too, when you look at the big picture of how you fix, find a repair shop. I want to tell you from my heart, if you have a repair shop and they know you by name and that you've been doing business with them for a long time and they like you and you like them, then you should never change. But you really have, you don't know how good your shop is until you have a dispute. And when you have a dispute, it's important to know that the beginning of that process is your letter to them, your email to them. And that email, that letter is going to set the tone. If you write, and I'll use me as an example just for purposes of explanation. If you write a letter to me.
We do have callers if you need them.
If you write a letter to me, if you're really nice about it, you're probably going to get what you want. I don't even care because it doesn't really make any difference to me who's right or who's wrong. It's do I want to keep you? But if you've complained every time you've come in and you read the riot act to my staff and then you write me a nasty gram, I don't even care if you're right or wrong. I'm not giving you what you want. It's no longer an issue of whether who's right or who's wrong. It's do you want to keep the customer? So that's how it works. All right, I'm ready for callers. Let's go. Who's next?
We got Tom up.
Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm working on a 69 Chevy half-ton pickup.
Okay.
And the engine has about 100,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And I think there's some sludge in there because I took some parts and pieces off and I can see it.
Okay.
I've always changed the oil really religiously on it.
Okay.
Every 2,500 miles, which is, it's a family heirloom, so I really baby this thing. But anyway, I was wondering, Pennzoil has some of that extended or long life oil for older engines, and they say that it's supposed to be really good for cleaning the thing out. What do you think about that?
Let me go back to what I think your real question is, Mark, is there anything I can do to get the sludge out of this motor? Is that your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, there is. First of all, in the old days, back when this truck was built, we thought that the engine should run real cold.
Mm-hmm.
And today we know that that's not the case at all. Every time you shut the car off, the engine will create 1 tablespoon of water. Water with oil makes sludge.
Right.
That's what you see. So what we really need to do is we need to bring that truck up to the 2000s. You need to put a 195 thermostat in that.
Okay.
And then you need to start changing your oils every 3,000 miles because that 195 thermostat. So let me ask you this, and I hope you passed science in high school. When does water boil?
212.
Bingo! Gosh, you're one of the few people that gets that. Thank you. The 195 is going to make it run at 220. Well, that means that any water in the oil that causes sludge is going to be vaporized, sucked out of the motor by the PCV valve, and sent down the tailpipe. So now we're going to start taking some of that moisture and we're going to get the engine hot enough to boil the water out of it and then we're going to move it. The only downside to this is that you may end up pulling the pan and replacing the screen somewhere down the line because we're going to start moving some stuff.
You mean on the oil pump?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, the screen on the pickup assembly on the oil pump. Now, if you wanted to start there, that'd be a great place to start. Pull the pan, put a new screen I'd probably put a new oil pump on it, oil pump and matching screen. Clean everything up, put it back on, start with your oil, get your engine temperature up to the 220 range, and you're home free. That engine will go 200,000. I want to tell you something. Back in the 70s, I owned a fleet of tow trucks, and of course, overheating was a common problem. So we took all the thermostats out. And we just let them run. And every single one of those things was so sludged up by 100,000 miles, and I never could figure it out. And it wasn't until I went to the school in Lexington, Kentucky for Valvoline did I understand why my motors were so sludged up. Later on in life, I started looking at motorhome engines that we'd pull out that had the appropriate thermostats. And at 200,000 miles, those were still clean as brand new.
Wow.
So I learned a lot there.
What about cleaning the existing stuff out, though?
Cleaning out the what?
The existing sludge that's already in there.
Well, I think if you're going to do... It would be really great if you pulled pan on it and you did the pan and the pump. everything else is going to be on the intake and higher, and we're going to go ahead and run that down to the pan, bring it up. We're going to, half of it will end up in the filter, and the other half will end up out the PCV valve. If you wanted to go crazy, you have to pull the pan after this process. Drain the oil, put 5 quarts of diesel fuel in it, start it up, run around the block a couple of times, shut it off, start it up, shut it off, then drain it, and you have to pull the pan, because by this time we've cleaned the engine up with diesel fuel and the screen's going to be plugged, and if you don't pull the pan and clean the screen, you're going to end up with a seized up motor. So you have an easy way and you have a more difficult way, and the more difficult way means you have to pull the pan after the diesel fuel. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay, who we got next?
We got Frank.
Frank, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Well, I'll tell you what I got. I got a 2006 Lincoln Tonka.
Okay.
And it has the ride system button in the back.
Rear airbags.
Rear airbags plus a pump under the hood. The whole thing.
Okay.
And been to the dealer twice. The last time I was there, it looked like they fixed it. The problem I have is anytime I get near a low part on the front of the car, the under, I'm going to call it a guard or some sort of plastic guard, will hit. They'll bottom out.
Okay.
So what I really want to do is I wanted the back to be lowered down.
Okay.
Because I think if you look at it, plus you look at other cars in the parking lot, at a Lincoln dealer, you will find that it's pretty level.
Okay.
Okay?
I can help you.
All right, good. Because I've tried. They supposedly won on a computer, and I had to go back to the Lincoln dealer because nobody else has
okay.
got it.
Okay. So here's the deal. What we have is we have an air pump, and then we have a valve both front and rear. And the valve is adjustable, and it allows, when the car comes up to a certain level, then the valve shuts off, and it maintains air in those rear and front bags, okay? Now, let's say you and I and two fat guys
one
sit
minute.
In the back, and we push down on it. Well, the arm opens the valve up and puts more air. It lifts us back up. Then we hop off the trunk, and then it drops down. You can adjust the suspension by bending or adjusting the front and the back arms. You just need to find somebody who does it. Send me an email at mark@marksalem.com and tell me where you're at. mark@marksalem.com. Or just go to marksalem.com and look at my shops and ask him, can you adjust the rear suspension height for me? It's not that it's fallen. It's I
seconds.
Want it down a little bit, or I want the front up a little bit. And there's a ride height specification that alignment guides will use to determine what the height's supposed to be, both front and rear. Okay, I want to remind you that this is... portion is brought to you by Quality Transmission. If you have a transmission question, you can't do better than Quality Transmission in Tempe. They are the great transmission shop and the best I know. Until next week, my name is Mark Salem, and I want to tell you that